Welcome to the Popmatic Podcast. It's July. I already tapped my fingers all over the table so many times that Clinton wants to rip He wants to rip my eardrums out. And it's July, and in honor of Independence, we are going to celebrate, of course,
Bastille Day.
Bastille Day. That's right. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. We're going to celebrate aliens for real. This month's show is about aliens. Whether Boba Fett is here or not, and I'm not kidding. Let's go back. Whether Boba Fett is here or not, and I don't mean Clint, I mean the real Boba Fett, because listen, Boba Fett is his whole deal is like he's real mysterious, and you never know who's behind the mask. It could be Ridley Scott, and we're going to tell him exactly how we feel about Prometheus.
Look out.
And here today to help me do that is...
Bill.
Crystal.
Amanda.
And...
Clint.
Clint is here.
In the booth.
And I'm Brian... On most days, the days that I'm good, I'm Brian. And we're going to give you some other recommendations for things about aliens that you could check out or download from the library. And then we're also going to talk about what tickles our fancy. But first, what's happening at the library in July?
Well, the Movies at Main Summer Series is happening, and I encourage everybody to come Saturday, July 14th at 2 p.m., because Movies at Main proudly presents The Duelist, director Ridley Scott's first film. This drama set during the Napoleonic Wars stars Harvey Keitel and Keith Carradine and Albert Finney. And it is also lauded as one of the most beautiful films of all time. And I'd like to emphasize this because when this film first came out, I remember looking for it because I read about it and I was intrigued, and it never showed the big screen anywhere in Nashville. And so here you'll get to see this movie on our big screen, even though projected on DVD, but you'll still get a sense of what the movie is about. So I highly recommend coming. It will be worth your trip. And remember, it's free.
And who directed that movie?
Ridley Scott.
Hey, all right. So who directed Prometheus?
Ridley Scott.
All right.
What do they have in common? Nothing.
You could make an argument that The Duelist could remind you that you can fill in the blank.
Could say one is good and one is really not good. That's how I would put it.
Spoilers.
You are on fire today. And then, were you going to pitch August movie too?
Well, I could.
Yeah,
Well, Saturday, August 11th, 2 p.m. in our auditorium, we conclude the summer series with The Brinks Job, directed by William Friedkin, starring Peter Falk, Peter Boyle, and Alan Garfield. This is a comic caper, and it's based upon the actual Boston robbery. And some of the actual robbers worked as advisors on the film. So once again, another unsung gem from the Nashville Public Library. And turn off the strange contraption.
That wasn't me tapping my fingers.
Oh, my friend's cat died, so I'm trying to console them.
You have to leave that in. Just like what happens in the Alien movie franchise, too. You fall in love with that cat, but eventually it dies. Also in July at the library, July 21st from 11 to 4 p.m. is International Zine Library Day. So up in the Teen Center, the good folks at Watkins and the Little Hamilton Collective, I think that's the first time they've ever worked with us for a library program, will be here showing you how to make your own zine. I think it is in the Teen Center. It's probably more aimed towards teens, but if you're a decent human being and you want to learn how to make a zine, showing up. That's July 21st, 11 to 4. Bring some paper and some tape and some scissors and some glue.
Some glitter?
So that's cool.
That's how I would do my zine. It would be glittery.
Yeah.
I always thought the best thing about a zine is it's made by people who are not really all that good.
That's part of it, yeah. It's like punk.
It's like bad people.
Bad people? I wouldn't know if like bad people. I guess I always kind of thought like like punk rock. Like punk rock doesn't necessarily sound good. Like quote unquote good, and zines aren't necessarily
real,
good.
Man.
Yeah, you know.
Can we talk about aliens?
Okay, this brings us to the hottest movie of the summer, and because we're so with it and the library's just so hip, we're going to talk about it a month after it's been released.
It's going to be on video by the time.
Yes, you can, yeah. You can watch it on Comcast, you know, on demand by the time. No, but hey, for instance, if you didn't see it, right, you might have, you know, some 4th of July time. You know, hopefully, I hope if you're working, you have the 4th of July off, you could go see a movie. Now, if you don't like the scary movies, right?
Like me.
Yeah, like Amanda. I don't know. It's pretty, you know, yeah. I don't know. I'm going to start with Bill. So what'd you think, Prometheus?
Personally, I liked it.
Yeah.
Did not love it, but I did enjoy it. And it had earmarks of Ridley Scott. Of course, it was a visual feast. And he worked the special effects in really well, and of course there are loose moments in the story, but I enjoyed how he took it because it was mainly about discovery, and it's just about, you know, people seeking out the truth and things. So he didn't go for the Alien is essentially a B horror film, you know, elevated to A status. Ridley Scott said that several times, but this one's more reminded me more about another neglected Ridley Scott film, 1492, which was about discovery, seeking out and trying to discover what's on the other planet. So that's my personal opinion, a short synopsis of how I feel about it.
Cool. Crystal?
I would agree. I liked it. Didn't love it. I think Michael Fassbender was the singular great thing about it. It was good to see Noomi Rapace, I'm probably not saying her name right, go on to do another film after Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. But Idris Elba, he was wasted in this film. But maybe he enjoyed being there, being on the set. I don't know. I did see it in IMAX 3D, and I kind of feel like I wasted my money paying that much to see it.
I haven't found IMAX to be good for feature films. Like when they, the ones I've seen have been not as cursed, but not as. Like if you go to those big THX theaters, I think it's a better show.
No, this looks amazing on IMAX.
Does it look good?
Yeah, 3D looks great.
I wear glasses, and so the 3D thing, it's just doesn't work.
Well, right, and maybe that's why. It's not.
You know, the 3D glasses with glasses, I mean, that just doesn't work. They're uncomfortable, they don't fit right. You can always see parts of the screen that aren't 3D.
I have no problem.
Yeah. I know this is just me. And I know, too, just for instance, my partner has astigmatism, so they have to wear glasses. So, but then again, do you wear glasses when you...
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, no, I just put them over it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had no problems. And
yeah, we're all library nerds. We all wear glasses.
Everybody in here.
I would go see it on. I think the IMAX is fun, but not the 3D.
I think that gives the only thing it has going for it is the visuals. So thus, you get that extra oomph from the visuals.
Yeah.
But then you're going to see a subpar movie for $17.25, so...
That's the price.
So you didn't like it?
No.
So specifically...
Clint, tell me what you thought.
Well, I mean, script-wise, it's just it's a wreck. It is such a mess, and so much is wasted, and I usually go into movies like this, and I'm very easily will give over to your logic of your movie. I mean, I don't go in and, try to pick things apart. My brother is the world's worst at that, and it just drives me nuts when he's just, trying to base thing off of, they wouldn't do that, and I'm just like, if they didn't do that, then it wouldn't be a movie. This one did went in, and, the first crack happened in the screenplay, and then it just started cracking for me. So thus, all of it was just lost, and I just sat there the whole time, picking it apart, you know? And then when I got away from it, when I went, you know, the next morning, I was still thinking about it. As I was telling Bill, it was like The Avengers, which is a movie I really liked. Never thought about it a second after I saw it. But Prometheus, I kept thinking about and just breaking it down and finding every flaw in it. And thinking about it, and it wasn't a good thinking about it. It wasn't finding great things in it. It was finding every single flaw in it, and there's so many. And when there's the great scenes happen, like the part, you know, the sort of, I don't know, spoiler. Are we spoiling here?
We spoil.
You know,
the movie's been out for a month.
When she gets like the surgery to get the get the thing out. I mean, that's an amazing scene, but it's completely fragmented from anything else going on. Because she goes and does this, and then nobody else acts like anything happened.
Yeah.
She comes out, you know, which is the best thing, the thing that I've read was someone was talking about the Guy Pearce character.
Yeah.
And they called him Guy Pearce Trash Humper. It's like the Army Korean. That's what he looks like. Yeah. He looks like a trash humper. So that cracked me up. That made me like, oh, okay.
That's a good Nashville connection. Yeah, I want to thank you for... like bringing this really awesome local connection to that movie.
There you go.
That I didn't know that Guy Pearce was in Trash Humpers, but now I know that he was. It just seems like we actually have consensus because I think the same way that you guys did, and that I just thought that the script was bad. Like I think maybe if they were going for something really big in the sense that like Bill said they were trying to answer. Or just deal with like really big questions about the nature of humanity, or you know, our species. The sci-fi movie that I think of is 2001, and that's another movie that I intentionally leaves you perplexed, but in a good way. Where I just think like with Prometheus, and people have done this online, right? Like just made these long, long lists of everything that happens that this doesn't make any sense as far as the themes of the movie. It doesn't make any sense as far as just. Probably the sort of nitpicking that your brother would normally do. Like the things that I know about science fiction fans who are just so nitpicky about things making sense and being right. Like this movie is just I don't get it. That being said, I'm with Bill. I thought it looked really cool. I thought they also deliberately went like the opposite direction of Alien, because Alien was really dark and claustrophobic in a really like cramped space. Where I think this, as much as they could, were like it was actually really open. Like that they show the big vistas on the planets, and the ship itself is actually like white and blue, and you know, it's well lit, it's not dark, and whenever she actually does have the alien cesarean, right, it's very well lit. I mean, that's part of the gross out intense scariness of it, is it's super well lit, you're seeing it happen, and those spacesuits are like blue and orange. You know, it's like, I think that's something that's really different. And just, I mean, I'm not a special effects guy, but with all the people, including us, that are sort of complaining about the story or the plot, I mean, hey, man, I know that there's probably a whole army of people that worked on that, so hats off to you. I guess the scene that I wanted to just mention in particular is when, like, the giant facehugger attacks the engineer alien, you know, at the very end. That thing looked so cool and monstrous. You know, that was probably done on CGI on a computer, so... like, I'm sure that they're listening. So the guys that animated that, you guys, or maybe girls too, I hope girls too, like, that was amazing. That was so cool looking. And the fact that people aren't talking about that, it probably means that you guys did a really, really good job. Everyone's worried about the script, but because imagine if the CGI was bad, everyone would be complaining about that too, and no one's saying anything about that.
I don't think you'll find better special effects in a movie this year. I mean, that end of the things is... impeccable. I mean, it's CGI is something that sticks out in my head always, but that was completely seamless.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, everything. I never had that moment of being taken out by that.
And I've talked about too about Michael Fassbinder, or Fast.
There we go again.
Fassbinder, right? You know, and I think if you get cast as the robot in the movie, that just means that you're, like, hyper-sexy. Like, I remember, like, if you remember Jude Law got cast in, like...
Artificial intelligence.
Like, that's... okay, man. You're it. If you get cast as the robot...
I don't think Lance Henriksen. I don't think sexy when I think of Lance Henriksen.
Here's... Wait. No, this is the difference. They were supposed to be... you're not supposed to know that they were robots. Like, they were supposed to be normal. But if the idea, okay, this... we know that this person is obviously a robot... right? We want them. It means that, man, you are like, you sort of have the platonic form of perfection, right? And that's why we chose like your body to be this model of robot. So, hey, man, you're in the pantheon of like the best looking men ever. The other actor I want to talk about is Sean Harris, who played Fifield, the geologist. And just, I think he stole every scene that he was in. It could just be the fact that he had tattoos all over his head. But I think that Sean Harris has really become one of my favorite character actors, and he was really good in the Red Riding trilogy, which the library has, where he played one of many corrupt cops, but his name's Bob Craven, if you want to have some insight into his character in that movie. But he was really good in Prometheus, and he was really good in the Red Riding trilogy, too. So I got... Oh, and then, of course, I think we really could just talk the whole time about what this movie was about or things that are good or bad with it. So I'm just going to throw out two words here. Space Jesus. If anybody wants to talk about Space Jesus, right, leave it in the comments and we can talk about Prometheus and Space Jesus. So does anybody in the room, do you know what I'm talking about? Do you know, Clint, do you know Space Jesus? Have you heard the Space Jesus theory?
Mm-mm.
So I'm just going to throw that out there. If anyone wants to talk about Space Jesus, leave me a note in the comments. We can get talking about Space Jesus. But, okay, you don't want to go see this $20 IMAX movie. You want to get something from the library and stay at home, get some ice cream, you know what I mean? You're going to have your cat there. You can be in your underpants. What can we get from the library?
That image out of my head is what I want. I want that gone.
Chris is down.
I guess you could wear pants if you wanted to, but what's the point of watching the movie at home? But anyway, like for real.
I've worked here for 10 years, I didn't realize that. That's why I checked out movies from the library.
I guess if you're with your family, you know, you wouldn't be like, but if you're by yourself,
yes,
you just go to sleep, right? All right. So, Bill, what you got?
Well, let me just start out with a quote. Rod Serling once said about The Twilight Zone, "With science fiction or fantasy, I could have an alien from another planet getting away with saying things that Democrats or Republicans couldn't." Keeping that in mind, I want to tell you about a television show the library has just gotten. It's called The 4400, which originally showed on the USA Network from 2004 to 2007. This was a show I first missed when it came on. I wanted to see it, and just lo and behold, about 3 weeks ago, we've got the entire four volumes here of it. In a brief overview, the 4400 refers to a group of people, 4400 exactly, who have disappeared since 1946 and suddenly reappeared in 2004. What I like most about the 4400s is it dealt with post-9/11 America. Everything from torture, xenophobia, and there was even an episode which dealt with the rights of library patrons. I should warn you, if you decide to make the commitment, and I suggest you strongly do, at the end of season 4, there is no closure. They cancel the show, and so it leaves you hanging. If you like intelligent science fiction without ray guns and Wookiees, the 4400 will fill that bill.
Boba Fett just smiled behind the mask.
Isn't Jeffrey Combs involved?
Jeffrey Combs is in it. That's one of the things I like. It's an anthology series, and he's involved in it. And also, it was just kind of cool when he first appears. Of course, Jeffrey Combs played Poe in Nevermore this past January. He has a scene with another genre favorite, Summer Glau, and he comes up to her, and they're in a mental institution, of course, and he hands her a book of H.P. Lovecraft. And
nice.
So, yes, he's in it, and they have excellent parts. They started out in season 2 for one episode, and they reappear in 3 and 4. It's kind of got this nice in and out, you know, characters come and go. And it's, when it was at its best, it was like an anthology series. You would deal with a different person who came out, and each person, while they've been gone away, have developed abilities. So you're dealing with that ability and what effect it has. So at its height and at its best, it's a very entertaining show. But like I say, it does leave you hanging. You'll have to make up your own ending.
I remember when that came out, they had, like, commercials everywhere. Like, I think every movie I went to see had a thing at the front of it for the 4400,
uh-huh.
And like, it was everywhere. It kind of creeped me out. So
yeah,
and
that's
go
a
back,
nice
but.
Thing. You don't have to, the show is first season 6 episodes. The next 3 seasons, you just have to watch 13 episodes. Mm-hmm. So it's not like 22. It's a very pleasant show to look at in that respect. And Crystal? What are you recommending, or what aliens are you recommending?
Well, no actual aliens are present in this movie, but Mars is colonized in the future, and there are sexy mutants involved. So I'm talking about Total Recall. It came out in 1990, directed by Paul Verhoeven, and starred Arnold Schwarzenegger as Douglas Quaid, a man who is haunted by his dreams of Mars, and a sleazy and demure brunette lady. He tries to convince his blonde wife of 8 years, Lori, to go on a trip to Mars. She says no. How about a cruise to Saturn? But he goes to his shift at the construction site, and after his shift at work, he visits Recall, which is a business that will implant a memory of a trip, and you don't have to even go anywhere or spend any money. When they try to implant the trip, he goes nuts. They realize he's already been to Mars as a secret agent with that sleazy and demure brunette. An evil corporation led by Cohagen controls the air on Mars, and the rebels are waging the war against him. And Quaid, he's really a guy called Hauser, and he's the only one that holds the information that they can use to save themselves and take down Cohagen. So Total Recall's got over-the-top violence, cool retro futuristic technology like tennis lessons taught by a hologram, face talk phones. Of course, there's those crazy one-liners from Arnold like, you know you're the girl of my dreams. That's right. It won an Oscar for visual effects, and the remake comes out in August, starring Colin Farrell as Quaid. Apparently, there's no trip to Mars this time. It's a war between Euro-America and New Shanghai. So I'm interested to maybe go see it. I don't know. Might have to read a couple reviews first.
I was going to say, I saw the preview when, you know, when I saw Prometheus, and I want to see the old Total Recall. but, you know.
Oh, I'm very fond of it. I mean, just kind of for nostalgia's sake, too. I mean, I had been driving just a year or two and got to go to the movie theater myself with my girlfriend. And, you know, it was like one of those really cool memories of she and I going and having fun. And
since this is the library podcast, I have to say it's based on a story by Philip K. Dick.
Well, yes, I failed to.
Contractually obligated.
Contractually obligated, okay.
I can remember it. Wholesale? Is that it?
Yes.
Oh, thank you.
We can remember it for you wholesale.
He has the longest titles.
The worst titles. Can Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? Yeah. Then even his editor had to, like, talk him down for that to be the title. The original title was, so what you got?
Well, since it's Bastille Day month, I wanted to try to find French aliens, but I'm not the film expert that Bill is, so I came up with zero French aliens. However, I did go to see The Avengers, and there's aliens in that. Like, you know, I'm the last person in the world to see this movie for the first time, but it's, you know, I've talked about Joss Whedon 9,472 times. He's the director. He wrote the screenplay. And I think you guys were talking about how Prometheus has a crappy script. I think Avengers has a great script, partially because he writes it, and he's just... He has a very good mix of comic relief and story. And I don't know superhero canon. Like, I didn't know half these superheroes because that's not my oeuvre. But I did enjoy the movie. But it reminded me, I felt like I was sitting there watching some hybrid combination of Independence Day and Serenity. Because the way the aliens come and, spoiler alert, get vanquished was very reminiscent of Independence Day, I thought. But then some of the battles, I thought, looked just like they came right out of Serenity. With their space battles and their shooting and their fighting. So if you didn't get to see The Avengers, just go watch Independence Day and then watch Serenity and then, like, mash them up in your brain, shake it around a little, and that's what The Avengers are, plus the Hulk.
And I guess there is this somewhat of this Prometheus connection in that the fourth movie in the Alien franchise was Alien Resurrection, which The original script was written by Josh Whedon, and notoriously in fandom world, like, his script was butchered and hacked by the studio.
Because it always is.
But and then that movie got really bad reviews, and everyone was like, well, you should have just left Whedon's script the way it was. And I'll see if I can find it. For a long time, his working script was on the interwebs, and you could grab it.
He probably got it posted somewhere.
So I'll see if I can link to that in the show notes. So his Josh Whedon's original script for Alien Resurrection. Yeah. Oh, it's my turn.
What's tickling your fancy, bro?
I'm still stuck in Alien world here because I'm like that. I wanted to talk about the movie Communion, starring Christopher Walken, which is the filmed version of Whitley Strieber's quote-unquote memoir about his alien abduction experiences. And it's basically like the two-hour-long best episode of X-Files you ever saw. So it's great because it's one of those few movies where Walken is really the lead, and he just gets to act like Christopher Walken the whole way through. And I think, too, that Whitley Strieber is sort of, I mean, I think he's kind of egotistical and likes to put on a show. And I think Walken's performance as him is truly the basis for a lot of, like, Walken's later, like, I guess I'm in this movie, but really I'm just Christopher Walken playing myself role, and other people's impressions of Christopher Walken. I think it really, like, starts inside of this movie. And I think, too, there's this one scene in particular. I guess everyone's going to have to come to their own conclusions on this, where Walken looks right into the camera. Walken, as Strieber, looks right into the camera, breaks the fourth wall, and I think drops this line that I think is basically just admits that, yeah, I made this up. This really didn't happen to me. Now, I don't know. I'm not saying whatever. You get to decide for your own. But that is one thing that the film toys with the whole way through, is that, well, maybe this is just happening in my head. Maybe this really didn't happen. I think Strieber, too, is in real life, in his other nonfiction books about this experience, whatever it was, is he's pretty open about, well, maybe this is something that just happened in my head. Maybe I really didn't get abducted by aliens. Now, someone who did claim to get abducted by aliens was Travis Walton, which was the basis for the film Fire in the Sky, which I think is perhaps more scary than Communion, but probably not as fun and not as weird. But we don't have the Fire in the Sky DVD, but we do have this book. So if you wanted to read about someone's actual really intense alien abduction experience, it's gone down in UFO lore as the most well-documented, perhaps legit, alien abduction experience. It's Travis Walton's book, Fire in the Sky, The Walton Experience. That's all I got, and I'm still on the ship now, right? This is not really happening here, right? Is that all in my head? You want to start it?
It's me?
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. So,
hey, introduce the segment.
This is Tickle My Fancy, segment 3 of the podcast.
If you're counting.
A little more enthusiasm. Come on now.
So, this month's Tickle My Fancy, I'm reading a book that I predict will be the 2012 book of the summer. It's called Gone Girl by Gillian Flynn. Characters Nick and Amy, they're a married couple who currently reside in small-town Missouri. On the day of their 5th anniversary, Amy goes missing. Gillian Flynn has written her latest novel in alternating first-person narratives. Amy is revealing their past in diary entries, and Nick is telling his side of events in the present. Gone Girl is the kind of psychological freak-out novel that will leave you dying to talk to someone about it, and so that's why I'm telling you all to read it.
Because you're going to talk about it whether we read it or not.
That's right. How about you, Amanda?
Well, my book's probably not going to be the big read of the summer. It's called Hot Art by Joshua Nellman. That's with a K. Basically, it's a nonfiction work that talks about the black market of stolen artwork and how there's very little regulation. It's a very interesting. It reads like a crime novel. One of the guys he talks to is a former thief. Started in Brighton, England, where he was a knocker. He'd go up and knock on people's doors, and they'd let him in. And he was a con man, Clint. So there you go. That's your new career, and there are very few, I mean, you can basically count on one hand the number of art cops that even know what they're talking about in the North American hemisphere. I mean, there's like one out in L.A., there's one in New York, there's one in Toronto, I think. I can't remember. There's like, it's not the biggest art market in Canada. So this is a very unregulated system, and the key here, folks, and you heard it here first, don't steal the big artworks because you can't resell them. So you're looking for the middlemen that are worth money but that you can still resell because nobody knows about them. So that's your hot tip from Hot Art. And I don't know who I'm throwing it to.
William.
All right, Mr.
Are you
Bill.
Condoning a theft, Amanda?
Well, you know, just Clay was looking for a side job. You know,
that's what I studied art in college for, was to be a con man, an art con man.
Well, see, there you
promise. Just didn't work out. I wasn't good at it. So here I am.
Like many people who studied art in college, I did it so I could one day participate in a pop culture podcast.
But there's no money in that.
Zabil, what's tickling your fancy?
Well, tickling my fancy is an American experimental metal band called Cornbugs. The group...
Sorry.
I'm not going to make this podcast.
It tickles Crystal's fancy, too.
I'm not going to make it.
Keep on.
Tickle... Okay, this is what's tickling my fancy. Is an American...
Sorry.
Cornbugs. You know, I heard you could buy something for those.
Okay. Tickling my fancy this month is an American experimental metal band called Cornbugs. The group is made up of Bill Chop Top Mosley, guitarist Buckethead, drummer Pinchface, and keyboardist Travis Dickerson. Bill Mosley, lead singer of Cornbugs, is also an actor who played Otis in House of a Thousand Corpses and The Devil Rejects. He played Possum on HBO's Carnival, and he was in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, in which he played Chop Top. What makes the songs unique is Bill Mosley sings all the songs as Chop Top from Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. This gives the songs its own twisted and demented spin. Let's listen briefly to I Want to Be a Clone.
I want me a clone to go dancing with my wife. I want me a clone for all the crappy things in life. Grow me another kidney in case and I get sick. Give me an organ transplant if he's got a bigger. Good night, sweet clone. You're always on my mind. I just might need your eyeballs because I think I'm going blind.
Granted, it's not Simon and Garfunkel, but it's still catchy in its own demented way. Feel free to go to YouTube and type in Cornbugs, and you can listen to such songs as Spot the Psycho, Pigs Are People Too, Meat, Rotten Meat, and Pain Donkey, just to name a few. Enjoy!
So are these guys a cover band, or are they writing their own stuff?
Oh, they're doing their own stuff. Nice.
Yeah.
It's this unique, very new.
And by the way, still have that Buckethead album in the collection?
I really don't know.
We should have some Buckethead albums in the collection if we don't.
But it was like, I met Bill Mosley, but went up to Wonderfest, and he was one of the guests there, and I went to hear his panel discussion. Of course, he plays these psychos, but of course, he's the nicest guy who walked on the face of the earth. And he just met Buckethead and said, hey, I want to do some songs with you as Chop Top, your character from Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And so it just sort of began. And they've been doing this since 95, so I guess they've had some success at it.
That's rad. For those of you who don't know, Buckethead is this virtuoso, like, heavy metal guitar player who wears, like, a Michael Myers mask and a KFC bucket on his head. That's why he's called Buckethead. And he's like one of those, like, Steve Vai, you know, Joe Satriani, like, can play any and everything. It's like he's a robot, how fast he can play. He's like one of the androids from the Alien movies, right, how fast he can play, for those who, like, don't know. Yeah, Mosley's kind of made a career as, like, kind of like this, like, performance artist as well as an actor in the years since Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. He's a cool guy.
And I still remember going to the Belcourt last year at a midnight showing for a mint. They had a mint print of Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, and after experiencing that at midnight and the shock and everything, I remember going to my car, and then I heard, hey, Bill, and it was my co-podcast caster hear Brian riding his bicycle home at 2 o'clock in the morning. I thought, well, that just tops the surreal night right there.
Well, I mean, I guess... I was just
did he have a KFC bucket on his head?
So the other... since we're talking about Bill Moseley. Bill Moseley was in a bad movie, but Repo the Genetic Opera with Ogre from Skinny Puppy, and like I'm just the biggest Skinny Puppy fan in the world. And they got to be friends on that movie because all the guys in Skinny Puppy are hardcore horror movie fans, so they love Bill Moseley. They're like, hey, we need to do a record. So they Bill Moseley and Ogre did a record together called Devil in My Details. Now, I think that's too underground. The library doesn't have that, but anyway, so they did a record there, and it was... basically, Bill Moseley sort of read these like prose passages, and then Ogre would sing. Anyway, more Bill Moseley stuff.
But I just recommend it. I've only have the one. I have one album, and I've already forgotten what it was. But anyway, it was just something different, and I just wanted to let you listeners out there know about it.
So, tickling my fancy this month. It's only Prometheus. I haven't thought or read about anything else much. I'm a huge obsessive fan of the Alien movies. My favorite movies ever. I totally embargoed myself before the movie came out. I didn't do any of the like the promo stuff from the studios, any of the reviews, anything. I didn't know anything. I went into it just like as pure as possible, and I was super excited. And then after I saw the movie, should I say how many times I've seen it? I won't. But after that, I just started reading like every review I possibly could of the movie, and it was interesting. I mean, the takes on the movie. So that's what's been obsessing me. Part of that fun, though, other than reading all the different reviews about this movie and people trying to make sense of the script, was that they made this like Wayland, the evil corporation in the movie. Like they made like a basically like corporate website for this company, and the website itself is huge and massive and totally cool. And maybe I'll link to that in the show notes. Like you can totally like explore it and all the cool visual stuff. And
didn't Wayland give a TED talk?
Well, yeah, they're like yeah. Wayland, the imaginary Wayland TED talk is on there. A Guy Pearce giving this, but even like advertisements for the David robot. And like spec sheets and advertisements for all the tech that's on the Prometheus ship, and like I mean it's just I mean they seriously made a like a website for this company, and then like every once in a while deep buried in there there's a link out to the actual a website for the Prometheus movie with a trailer, and even that it's still marketed as if it's the Prometheus project by the Wayland Corporation. And then only the video is for... So anyway, I haven't thought about anything else, you know? And we're just in this movie. The screenwriter for Prometheus was...
Damon Lindelof.
And I think that he was probably trying to go big. And in the past, you know, he did Lost. And we've got some big Lost fans here, right? And there's one example where I think he did try to go big and mystical. And everyone got it and loved it and was happy to be perplexed and was fascinated to be perplexed. So, like, I mean, I think sometimes when he tries that, it does work. But I don't know if it necessarily worked. I don't know if it resonated with audiences in this movie. And I'm just, like, one of those people that's like, I do not want to be the person who says to Hollywood, make your movies dumber. You know, like, maybe you shouldn't have tried to, like, reach so far, right? But, I mean, I don't know if this one particularly, you know, worked out so well. But...
Script needed another draft, two drafts.
Something needed to happen. It's hard to find the truth when you have a big alien snake in your mouth. That's
well,
all I'm going to say.
They say that there's 30 minutes that Scott's going to put back into it, so maybe that'll clean
that'll
up.
That'll help.
Or it could just add to it.
Tell you what, if it doesn't...
Well, it did help American Gangster when that came out on DVD.
It seems
the
little,
adding to it.
With most Ridley Scott movies, this it's kind of that way.
Well, there's always the extended cut to Ridley Scott. American Gangster, Robin Hood, they've all had extended cuts.
Blade Runner,
notoriously. By now, you think that he would have, you know, final cut on all
of them. Well, okay, here's I gotta ask this question. I always hear, right, that they pretest these movies, right? And if people don't like them, right, they go back and they make changes. So, like, most people have been confused by Prometheus. Or even the people that aren't confused are like, well, it's a big, crazy, action-filled special effects. I don't care about the parts of the plot that didn't make sense. didn't the people in the test screening say that? Or does like Ridley Scott have enough clout? It's like, this is my movie. This is the Alien prequel. I can do whatever I want. I mean, I have to wonder, you know?
I don't know if he does test screenings or not. I don't think I've ever...
But he wouldn't have to... Or, like, he wouldn't have to do that. He doesn't have to answer to his...
He's probably to that point in his... Or he better be to that point in his career.
Yeah.
From what I've read, yeah.
But I don't know.
I mean, he's learned his... Yeah, from what I've read, he learned his lesson on, like, Blade Runner, where they wanted him to go back and make Legend, where they wanted him to go back and changes. And he says, what I should have just done was dig my feet in and said no. So I'm sure he's at that point, said, this is the film we're setting out to make, and you're going to have to stick with it. And that's... I've listened to a lot of Ridley Scott commentaries.
All right. We done?
I'm done.
Anybody else got anything to say? Yeah?
If you want more info, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
You can find stuff out there.
Fun stuff.
About other things.
Library related, of course.
You got the evil eye on that.
What? What? What do you mean? I was going to make a Dewey Decimal joke. I was going to make a joke about Dewey Decimal.